Another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Have a lot to talk about today. If you want to learn more about Hope, you can at investinghope.com. If you want to listen to the show, of course you can, live at Joy 620 every single Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock. Or you can listen to the archive, the podcast form, over at investinghope.com. You can also find the podcast over on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn app, wherever podcasts are found. You can find the show. Today we have, man, there's a lot to talk about. We could, if we wanted to, we could start with the Super Bowl. How many of you watched the Super Bowl? I'm sure most of you did. That's kind of become a national holiday. Even if you're not a football fan, you tend to watch the Super Bowl. I will say that I'm not a cook. I don't cook. Never have. My wife reminds me of that often. But I bought some wings, and I cooked wings for the Super Bowl, and they were quite good. I even had leftovers, and I ate them yesterday for lunch. So I don't want to brag, but I am bragging. They were really good, honey barbecued wings, very, very good. Enjoyed those. A lot of people talking about the halftime show, so guess what? Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the halftime show. I'm not going down that road. As J-Lo and Shakira performed, and man, they really upset a lot of people, and some people they made happy. So that's where we are as a society and country. But look, if you're looking for a family oriented a rated G halftime show, it's probably best you not watch the Super Bowl halftime show. We'll just leave it at that. That's why growing up, we would have Super Bowl parties at church, and at halftime we would have somebody give a devotion. Or Kurt Warner had a video. He played football. He had some kind of, you know, Bible study or something like that. It's funny, though. We did that in the town I grew up in, and I was telling people about that here in Knoxville, and they said they never did that. They didn't have Super Bowl parties, and they didn't have devotions at halftime, but that's why we did. So the infamous Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake performance from years and years ago, we were having devotion during that time, and my young eyes didn't see what occurred on the screen. So halftime devotions, not a bad idea to implement from here on out. So we also could talk about, if we wanted to, we could talk about the Iowa caucus that supposedly occurred yesterday. But you know what? As of right now, we have no results. None whatsoever. I haven't been on this earth that long. But I have been politically involved and engaged in terms of listening, watching, being active in politics for over half of my life. I've never seen anything like what we're seeing in Iowa. We had the caucus last night. Democratic candidates are caucusing. And for those that are not familiar with what a caucus is, at a primary in Tennessee, when there's a primary, you go and you say, I want to vote in the Democratic primary, I want to vote in the Republican primary, and then you go and you vote in that primary. You actually, we usually say pull the lever, but you don't really pull a lever for anybody. You scroll over, click on the person that you're going to support, and then go from there. Well, the way it is done in Iowa is you go to precincts, and then there are going to be people there with signs, and their sign may say, caucus for Pete, caucus for Bernie, caucus for Elizabeth Warren, for Amy Klobuchar, or the list goes on and on and on. And so you would actually go into that precinct, and then you would go stand in line at the sign of the person that you agree with. Now, you may be listening to that and saying, well, that sounds archaic. Yeah, they've done it for over 50 years, never had any issues. They had a minor issue a few years back with a rural precinct, but nothing major. And so very few issues at all have they had with the Iowa caucus. Well, the past this year, the Democratic Party of the state said, look, here's what we're going to do in the National Democratic Party. They said, we're going to have an app, and we're going to be able to report results in real time on this app. All the precinct leaders have to do is have the app on their phone, upload the votes, upload the results, and then we'll be able to release the results. Sounds easy enough. It's 2020. We all use apps. Here's the thing, though. Have you ever been to a polling place? Who's typically running the election polling places? Volunteers. They're not paid anything. if one would make an assumption, probably not using a lot of apps. But here's another thing that occurred in Iowa was no one trained anybody how to use the app. So when it got down to the time to, hey, we need to have the results, they kind of said, look, the app's not working. There's a little bit of a problem here. Let's go and just make phone calls. Call the headquarters and we'll report your results. Well, then you had precinct captains calling headquarters and were being on hold for 90 minutes. Then you had people saying, look, I'm going home. I'm not staying here. And so I went to bed last night. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, well, I don't know why we don't have results yet, but we'll have results in the morning. I get up this morning, pull up the news. Guess what? No results. No results whatsoever. And so as of right now, they have said today that at 5 o'clock Eastern time, so anytime now, they're going to release half of the results, at least half of the results, and then release the rest later. Look, that's not a way to do things. Just objectively speaking, if I was running for in that primary, I would say no. Either release all the results or don't release any of them. Because now what you're going to have is you're going to have some folks saying this was rigged. They're trying to push Bernie out. You're going to have Bernie supporters certainly saying that. They're trying to push him out. You're going to have Biden who has come out. It appears by all accounts, Joe Biden did a terrible job in Iowa. And so his campaign is going to say, look, don't release them. We don't want to see any of the results. Well, why not? Because he didn't even make the top three, so they're not going to want him released. You're going to have people like Mayor Pete who's saying, look, I made the top two. He declared victory last night before any results came out. So then you're going to have people like Mike Bloomberg, who wasn't even there, saying this is perfect. This is perfect timing for me to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on ads, which we already saw during the Super Bowl. And so it's going to be interesting to see what occurs with what's going on in Iowa. But look, folks, a lot of people are going to say we need to get rid of the caucus process. It's not the process. The process works. It has worked for a long time. But what you had this year, instead of doing paper ballots and keeping all of that on paper, which is very easy, you had folks say, hey, we're going to create this fun new app that we're not going to train anybody on. We're not going to really test out the kinks. We don't know if it's going to work, but trust us, it'll work. And guess what? It did not. It did not work. Even late last night, you had the organization that created the app. Guess what their name is? Shadow Inc. Sounds very transparent. But anyway, they were posting late last night, job openings to help with customer service because of the struggle. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, you know, 2020 is going to be interesting. Already we have, it's just Tuesday. And we have the State of the Union address tonight by the president, which I'll probably discuss a little bit next week. So we have the State of the Union address tonight by the president. But just this week, we've had the Iowa caucus mishap. We had the Senate ultimately decide not to see any more witnesses. Then we had, we'll probably have the acquittal of the president tomorrow. And it's just Tuesday, folks. Crazy, crazy time. So a lot of stuff happening. Speaking of addresses, our governor in the state of Tennessee, Bill Lee, gave his State of the State address last night. And now why is that important? It's important for a number of reasons. First off, because I'm a Tennessean and I'm biased and I think it's the greatest state in the union. Second off, it's because of what was said in his speech. And I think it's important, especially for pro-lifers. If you're listening to this show, there's a really good chance, certainly that you're Christian. There's a really good chance that you would consider yourself a pro-lifer. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the State of the State address because of something that the governor said. First off, he said he was talking about his pro-life legislation that's going to be coming very, very soon. And I want you to hear his language because his language is amazing. And this is what he said. He said, Unborn Life Protection Act. And so he tweeted this last night. Last month, we proposed the Unborn Life Protection Act because every single life is precious and worth protecting, especially our most vulnerable. Tennessee will continue to defend, cherish, and celebrate life at every stage. He also gave a story and he talked about his grandkids being born, twin grandkids being born. And when they were born very early. And he looked at them through the window and they were 1 pound, 5 ounces. And he said he's always appreciated life, but in that moment, he saw, in a very real sense, how precious life is. And so what is the Unborn Life Protection Act? It's prohibit an abortion where a fetal heartbeat exists, require a mother to undergo an ultrasound prior to an abortion, and prohibit an abortion where the physician is aware that the decision to seek an abortion is motivated by the race, sex, or health or disability of the unborn child. Now listen to that last part. Prohibits an abortion where the physician is aware that the decision to seek an abortion is motivated by the race, sex, or health or disability of the unborn child. So what that means is, and we have places across this country, across the world, that are doing this. We have folks that are finding out their baby has Down syndrome, and they're immediately saying, I'm going to get an abortion because the baby has Down syndrome. This would make that illegal. We have folks seeking abortions that they don't know who the father is. And one possibility, the father is one race. The other possibility, the father could be another race. And so the person chooses abortion based on the race of the father, which would change the race of the baby. That will be no longer allowed in the state of Tennessee. We have some folks that would say ultrasounds are useless. We don't need ultrasounds. It's just a burden, and it's making it more difficult for women to achieve abortions. Well, it's a requirement in the state of Tennessee through this law that an ultrasound must occur before an abortion is performed. You see, these are not extreme measures by any stretch. And I'm gonna talk in a little bit about what's going on in Virginia. And you're going to see what extreme measures are when it comes to abortion. What this does, what the governor is seeking to do, what the sponsors of the bills are seeking to do, is simply protect every citizen in the state of Tennessee, which includes those in the womb. That's all. It's not extreme. But when we come back, I'm going to talk to you about what's going on in Virginia. And you're going to see what extreme is when it comes to abortion. And the reason why we talk about these things, and yes, voting is not the end-all be-all, but it is important. And you'll see why it's important when we talk about Virginia when we come back. Nobody loves me like you love me, Jesus. I stand in awe of your amazing ways. I worship you as long as I am breathing. God, you are faithful and true. Nobody loves me like you. So we are right smack dab in the middle of election season. I mean, we're in 2020. This is the year. This is we're going to find out who is the front runner for the Democratic Party and who will be facing the president in the general election. Look, this is, you know, we just had the Super Bowl on Sunday. For a political nerd like me, this is Super Bowl all year long. This is it, man. This is the big election. And so it's going to be interesting to see what occurs and what happens. It's going to be interesting to watch the State of the Union address tonight and just to see what is said. I mean, we have the possibility, you know, there was a congressman that asked the other day if we ever had a president who is impeached speak and provide a State of the Union address. Well, yeah, we have. Bill Clinton did that in the 90s. And so we've had that before. The president, you know, from all accounts, unless something from way out in left field happens, is going to be acquitted. So he's probably, you know, he's going to be trying to be the first president, impeached president, not convicted, but impeached president to ever win re-election. He's seeking to do that as well. So it's going to be an interesting time. But as we pull back a little bit from federal politics and just look at what's going on across the country in terms of states, and the reason why I bring this up again is because, look, we have to be loving our neighbor as gospel people. The pro-life issue is gospel first and foremost. That drives everything that we do. So the reason why we have our doors open at Hope Resource Center is because the gospel compels us to love our neighbor. That includes those in the womb and those out of the womb, certainly. But I've said it on here multiple times that doesn't mean we put our voting and the politics on the shelf. We we certainly engage in that process as well, but understanding that if we go too far, then that becomes our idol and politicians become our God and our political party becomes our religion. And that is not the direction we need to go. But what we have to understand is elections have consequences. Elections have consequences, and that's what we're seeing over in the state of Virginia. And there's a great piece over at National Review. They should really pay me as much as I talk about them, but a great website, an amazing piece kind of talking about what's going on in Virginia and the consequences that come from an election. So exactly 1 year ago, Virginia's General Assembly made the news after a representative, a Democratic representative, Kathy Tran, introduced a bill to remove state restrictions on abortion in the last 3 months of pregnancy. You'll remember this. I talked about it on this show. Look back a year ago, and I talked about it on this show. Though all of its provisions were plenty extreme, the bill's text wasn't what drew attention. It was Tran's comments about the legislation during a hearing. Here's part of the exchange between Tran and a Republican representative, Todd Gilbert, who was the majority leader of the Virginia House of Delegates at that time. So Gilbert said, "So how late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?" And Tran responded, "Or physical health?" Gilbert said, "Okay, I'm talking about mental health." Tran responded, "I mean through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks. Gilbert then said, "So to the end of the third trimester?" Tran, "Yes, I don't think we have a limit in the bill." Gilbert, "So where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she's about to give birth, would that still be a point at which she could still request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating." That's what Gilbert is saying. I mean, she is actually dilating, about to give birth to her child. This is the response by the Democratic representative. She said, "Mr. Chairman, you know that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would make." Gilbert said, "I understand that. I'm asking if your bill allows that." And Tran ended up by saying, "My bill would allow that, yes." Though the irate response from pro-lifers prompted Tran to put a more palatable spin on what she had said, her initial description of the legislation was in fact correct. It would have undone restrictions on abortion after fetal viability while adding no limitations of any kind. If a woman were to obtain a, quote, mental health exception to regulations on abortion in the last trimester, there is no reason to believe that trans bills would have stopped her from having that abortion performed while she was in labor. Because the GOP had a narrow hold on both chambers of the Virginia legislature at the time, trans legislation failed to pass. But after Democrats won a number of key victories in last year's state elections, Republicans no longer hold a majority in either house, and pro-abortion legislators are poised to take advantage. Though not as extreme as what Tran proposed, a collection of Democratic bills in both the state house and the Senate would loosen existing regulations on abortion. One would permit non-physicians, including physicians' assistants, nurse practitioners, and midwives, to perform abortions. Now, hear that again. There are bills in Virginia that are saying, look, we don't even need doctors to provide the abortion. It can just be, it can be a nurse, it can be a nurse practitioner, it can be a physician's assistant, it can be a midwife. The article goes further. Another would remove the parental consent requirement for minors seeking an abortion and the requirement that women seeking an abortion obtain an ultrasound first. Did you hear that? So they're going to say you don't even need an ultrasound. You don't even need an ultrasound. If you want an abortion, get it. They're going to let minors. You don't need parental consent. Think about that. A minor can go get an abortion in the state of Virginia if this bill passes, but they can't go see a rated R movie. Really? So if this passes in the state of Virginia, a minor cannot buy cigarettes, cannot get a tattoo, cannot get a piercing, cannot see a rated R movie, but they can get an abortion. That's where we have ended up in our current society and culture. And they're saying, you don't even need an ultrasound. We don't even need you to see what's going on inside. The last thing they want is for you to see what's going on inside. The article continues, the legislation also would eliminate provisions governing informed consent. so that the person performing the abortion no longer would have to give women a, quote, a full, reasonable, and comprehensive medical explanation of the nature, benefits, and risk of and alternatives to abortion. Neither would women be told that they could withdraw their consent at any point prior to the procedure. If you fell today and tore your ACL, and you went into the doctor, and you had a scan, and they said, look, yeah, your ACL is torn, what are they going to do? They're going to walk you through. They're going to walk you through the process of the surgery that you need and the complications that may come of it. They're going to explain it to you, describe it to you, what the recovery looks like, what exactly is going to happen. If you get any kind of procedure performed, a doctor is going to explain it to you. But now when it comes to abortion, they're removing the informed consent. They don't even have to explain it to you. They can just say, look, you have a blob of tissues inside of you. We're going to remove that blob of tissues. That's it. That's all we're doing. But they're not going to tell you what the abortion actually does. They're not going to tell you that at a certain point in your pregnancy, if you get an abortion, they're going to have to ingest the baby with something that will stop the heartbeat, and then they're going to have to remove baby out of you. They're not going to explain how that process goes. And so these things are important. The article goes further. Under current Virginia law, women must be offered a chance to speak in advance with the physician performing the abortion, must receive a statement of the probable gestational age of the fetus, and must be offered a chance to review materials about the science of unborn human life, about agencies that offer alternative to abortion, and about medical assistance benefits that could help them obtain prenatal care. The bills under consideration would remove those provisions entirely. At a press conference last week, the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia said her organization was backing the legislation in the hopes that Virginia would be a, quote, safe haven if Roe v. Wade were overturned. Now, why is that important? You see, we have to be honest with ourselves. It's the same reason Governor Lee is seeking to pass laws here in the state of Tennessee that are going the other direction. Because we want the state of Tennessee, if Roe is overturned, to become a safe haven for the unborn. Whereas the state of Virginia, NARAL, is arguing we want the state of Virginia to be a safe haven, not for the most vulnerable, not for the unborn, but for those that would seek abortions. So while you have some pro-life states seeking to become sanctuaries for the unborn, you have other states seeking to be sanctuaries for those that want to end the life of the unborn. But passing this legislation would signal that Virginia intends to become far more than a safe haven to preserve the status quo laid out in Roe, which, as NARAL staff surely knows, is no longer the case law governing abortion policy anyway. It would put Virginia on par with a handful of Democratic states working hard to strip away even the most reasonable regulations on abortion. Treating a procedure that ends a human life as a social good rather than as a last resort undertaking only after careful consideration. That's why elections matter. That's why the rhetoric matters. You see, last year when that representative was standing up there and saying, my bill allows for abortion at any time during the pregnancy, even when the woman is dilating. That's why when pro-lifers were saying, listen to what she is saying. And folks on the left were going, oh no, that's, You're just creating a straw man and you're fear-mongering. That's not what the bill would do. No, that's exactly what the bill would do. That's what they want. Take them at their word when they say these things. And that's why we have to be vigilant. That's why we have to be active. And that's why we have to love our neighbors. Because when legislation takes it to a place of not loving those in or out of the womb, we have a chance to step in and say, look, we're going to take care of you, mama. We're going to love you through this. and we're going to be there for you. We'll be back.
I count my blessings one by one, your goodness in my life. How could I ask for more? In you I'm satisfied. All the mountains that I ascend, they leave me in.
So as the conversation continues, what I want to do now is address a little bit of what I talked about last week. Is I talked about a town hall meeting where a Democratic, a pro-life Democrat stood up and addressed a question to Mayor Pete, who is running for president. He's the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana. I'll just throw this out there. South Bend has 102,000, roughly 102,000 people in South Bend. He was the mayor of that place. And now he wants to be president. So just that's important numbers to reflect on. But there's a Kristen Day who addressed him, has written an article that I think is important for us to hear. I think a lot of times, and maybe it's just me, but I think a lot of us, when we think of pro-lifers, we immediately put them in a certain camp, a certain political party. We label them as conservative. We very seldom do we say, hey, there's a liberal pro-lifer. Very seldom do we find ourselves saying there's a Democrat pro-lifer. But the reality is that's a mistake. There are a lot. And so I think it's important that we, when we talk about life issues, the pro-life issue and the issue of abortion in this country, we have to look at it from a standpoint of, hey, who wants to stand with us? Who wants to stand with us? And so we also find ourselves asking the question, well, why, if you find yourself, if you say you're pro-life, why would you line up with a party that adamantly opposes that stance? We look at somebody in like the governor of Louisiana who is pro-life but is a Democrat. We look at the person that sponsored the heartbeat bill in Louisiana. The person, she actually spoke at the March for Life in Washington, D.C. She's a pro-life Democrat. And some may even question, well, why would you stay in that party? Well, Kristen Day wrote an article that discusses why she won't leave her party. And so I thought it was important for us to look at and kind of dissect as we read through it. So she says, on Sunday night at Fox's Town Hall with Pete Buttigieg, I asked two simple questions. Does he want the vote of 21 million pro-life Democrats? And if so, would he support language in the Democratic Party platform respecting diversity of thought on this issue, as was the case in 1996 and 2000? Now think about that. Now that's not that long ago. Now, the year 2000 was 20 years ago, which is boggles my mind that that's the case. But that's not that long ago. 1996, the year 2000, on the platform, in the Democratic Party platform, they respected a diversity of thought when it came to abortion. Well, why is that? Because the big players believed in some restrictions on abortion. Bill Clinton did. Joe Biden did. All the major players believed in some restrictions on abortion. So in 20 years, we've gone from, hey, safe, legal, and rare to anytime, anywhere, for any reason, and you should have to pay for it as a taxpayer. And so the writer goes further. While Buttigieg said he tried to earn my vote, this so-called moderate candidate refused to respond to my question about platform language, even when pressed to do so by me and the moderator, Chris Wallace. With answers like that, it's no wonder that for years the Democratic Party has been shedding its pro-life voters. With the Republican Party and President Trump doubling down on pro-life policy, some pro-life Democrats are becoming Republicans, or often becoming independents. And I would argue there are probably more of them becoming independents. The share of registered independents grew from 22% in 2000 to 28% in 2008. Some of them former Democrats disillusioned by the Democratic Party's abortion extremism. Many voters who switched from Barack Obama in 2012 to Trump in 2016 lean pro-life. For example, 56% of this group opposes the use of health insurance for abortion, a key policy pushed by Democratic National Committee leadership. Pro-life Democrats have many reasons for walking away. The removal of conscience language from the abortion section of the Democratic Party platform in 2004. Hillary Clinton dropping the, quote, rare part of safe, legal, and rare in 2016. And Joe Biden dropping his opposition to the Hyde Amendment in 2019. Many Democratic voters oppose these extreme changes. For example, 64% of Democratic voters support limiting abortion to the first 3 months. Only one presidential candidate, Tulsi Gabbard, opposes late-term abortion in line with a supermajority of Democrats. Thank you, Tulsi, for taking a stand on the common sense issue. But in spite of all these issues, I will fight and stay, not only because this party, which is meant to fight for the little guy, is my natural home, but because if we leave, the pro-abortion extremism of the 2020 Democratic Party will worsen. Now, again, this is the words of Kristen Day, the pro-life Democrat that spoke out at a town hall with Mayor Pete. I want to show to the leadership of the Democratic Party not only that pro-life principles are consistent with compassionate Democratic ideals, but that the votes of 21 million Democrats cannot be taken for granted. Kristen goes further. I won't stop defending the Democratic Party, the party of the living wage, healthcare, and pro-life, pro-family policies, but I won't give it a free pass on human rights of a vulnerable group of human beings. I'm not calling on other pro-life Democrats to walk away. I'm calling on them to work with me in putting pressure on our presidential candidates to work for us, not for the abortion industry. Do I expect these candidates to become pro-life in a day? No. But I do believe we have the numbers to force these candidates into a corner on the whole life causes supported by most Americans: opposing late-term abortion, expanding paid parental leave, and prohibiting public funding of abortion, for example. At the very least, presidential candidates should affirm a plank in the Democratic Party platform that respects the diversity of thought on abortion. If pro-life Democrats ask that question at public events, write letters, and demand meetings, we can make progress on this issue. This move isn't just symbolic. It allows the Democratic Party to run pro-life Democratic candidates in deep red states with a chance of winning, like Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards. In Louisiana, 60% of the population believes abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. Refusing to run or fund pro-life Democratic candidates, which some groups are increasingly doing, consigns the Democratic Party to irrelevance in a slew of states. Not only is it arrogance to give up on states like Louisiana because the population has deeply held philosophical beliefs on life, but it's plain wrong. The residents of Louisiana deserve Democratic governors. Governance, paid parental leave, a living wage, voting rights, and better child care. They shouldn't be punished for refusing to be pro-choice, which would be the effect of shutting pro-life Democrats out of the party. And it goes on and on and on. And so as we think about that, I do believe there's a there was a missed opportunity over the last 4 years. Now, why do I say that? I say that because when President Trump was elected, when he was running in the primary, there were some folks that questioned his pro-lifeness that thought, well, I don't know if he's as pro-life as he claims to be, and I don't know what he's going to do when he gets in the Oval Office. I don't know what kind of judges he's going to appoint. And so you had a lot of folks that are kind of like, I don't know, I'm going to wait and see. Now, what we've seen over the last 4 years is a very much pro-life candidate. When it comes to the abortion and life issue, we have seen a number of good things occur. We've seen things not happen that we wanted to happen, but we've seen a lot of good things occur. But I think there's an opportunity here, and that's what I don't understand, is you have both parties that say, look, we want to be a big tent party. Now, what does that mean? That means that we want to attract people from all walks of life. We don't have to agree on every single issue, but there are certain things that we want to allow for. And so all Kristen Day is saying is, why am I not welcome in the big tent? And they may not outright, now there's some that would outright tell her, you're not welcome because you're pro-life, you're against women's rights to an abortion, you can't be a part of our party. But there are others that won't outright tell her that, but they will say, just go vote for somebody else. They'll look at her and say, like Mayor Pete did last week, well, I think that's up to a woman and her doctor. It's not up to the government to draw the line, it's up to the woman to draw the line. You see, now that sounds good, and you can put a little bow on that and take that around the campaign trail with you, and people are going to feel good when you say that. When you look at them and say, look, it's not up to the government to draw the line. It's up to you, the woman, the mom, to draw the line. You hear that and you say, we don't want government intrusion. But here's what we're missing. This isn't about just some line. You see, because what we know is there's a life, a separate, unique, individual life involved in that line drawing. So you can draw the line and say, hey, it's my decision, it's my choice, it's my right as an American. But in doing that, in making that argument, you are saying our law actually says some rights of some have more credibility than rights of others. And what I mean by that is we actually say there's a demographic in our society that have no rights. There's a demographic in our society that have their own blood type, that have their own brain, that have their own fingerprint, that have their own organs, that have their own arms, legs, everything. Have their own heart. But if a woman chooses to have an abortion, then she can end that very unique life. You see, that doesn't make sense. Even from a logical standpoint, even from a very rational, secular standpoint, if a woman is driving, in most states in the union, if a woman is driving to an abortion clinic and she's pregnant and she has every intention of getting an abortion, if while on her way to that abortion clinic she is hit by a drunk driver and she loses her baby in that car wreck, that drunk driver is going to be charged with vehicular homicide. Why? Because he ended the life of a blob of cells? No, because he ended a unique individual's life. You see, there's no rationale to the way we do things. But we've gone further now that in the state of New York, we've even pulled language back. Language that protected a mom and protected her baby if she was attacked by an abuser. Let's say a woman got pregnant and her boyfriend did not want her to have that baby. And so he took it upon himself to end that baby's life. A forced abortion. Punches that mom in the stomach, ends the life of the baby. In years past, in the state of New York, that man would be charged with homicide because he took the life of another human being, even though it was in the womb. Well, New York, just last year, passed a piece of legislation that said that baby no longer is a baby. It's no longer a life, and that abuser can attack and will not be charged with murder. He'll be charged with battery. He'll be charged with assault, but he will not be charged with murder. But the reality is we all know what's going on. We know that it's a life. Our laws, our conversation, our court decisions, all of that should point to the truth that we all know. That it's a unique individual life growing inside of that womb. And it is up to us, as fellow citizens, as gospel people that love our neighbors and image bearers in this world, to stand for them because they can't stand for themselves. We'll be back.
Jesus Messiah, name above all names, blessed Redeemer.
So another good show in the books. At least, I mean, I'm biased. I always say it's a good show. But hopefully you enjoyed the conversation today as we talked about a number of things going on here in the state, around the country, different states like Virginia and New York. And these things are important because we need to be on top of what's happening when it comes to life and abortion, prepared for those conversations. But ultimately, we need to be rolling up our sleeves and getting to work. And so if that means partnering with Hope Resource Center, we would certainly welcome that, investinghope.com. If that means partnering with the pregnancy center in your area, in your city, in your town, in and around this country, we would certainly encourage you to do that. It is worth the effort. It's worth the time. It's worth your prayers. It's worth your funds. All of that. We are making a difference in the lives of many because we've decided to not just sit on our hands while our neighbors are hurting. And so take advantage of that. Reach out to a pregnancy center in your area, partner with them, and seek to be a part of what's happening in our neighborhoods. Seek to be a part of what God is doing when it comes to the pro-life movement. It is quite amazing. One thing I do want to mention as well, and it's important that we note, is coming up, and I mentioned this at the end of last week, but coming up, we are having our banquet, of course, coming up in April. And so April 30th, 7 p.m. at the Press Room, that's 730 North Broadway here in Knoxville, we're having Hope's 2020 Fundraising Banquet. We would love to see you there April 30th, again, 7 p.m. We're going to have valet parking. It's going to be an amazing night. It's just that you can go to our website, investinghope.com, look for the events tab, and registration opens today. So you can register today to join us. If you want to be a table host, you can do that. If you are listening, you're like, man, I'd love to sponsor, then reach out to us, investinghope.com. Also, maybe you're thinking, I can't make it, but I'd love to partner with you financially. You can do that at investinghope.com as well. So join us at the Press Room over on North Broadway, 7 p.m. Thursday, April 30th. It's going to be a great time. You'll hear from me. You'll hear from you'll be able to meet and see some staff members, talk to them, some of our board. Also, you will hear from a patient, and a story will be shared about how Hope was able to impact them, and what occurred through those conversations, through those appointments, through the parenting classes, and so on and so on and so on. And so we really want you to be a part of that. We want you to be there. It is a fundraiser, so understand that. I don't want you to be caught off guard. There will be a moment when I'm talking to you and I'm asking for money. I don't want you to be uncomfortable. I don't want you to be surprised. It is a fundraising banquet, so that is going to happen at some point in time while you're there. But the food's going to be great. It doesn't cost to come. You don't have to pay it, buy a ticket or anything like that, but we do need you to register. We do need you to sign up and let us know if you're coming, how many you're bringing. If you want to host the table again, we would love for that to happen. We are seating 10 at a table, and so if you have 9 friends, or 9 strangers, whoever you want to invite, just invite them, bring them with you. We'd love for them to get to know what we're doing at Hope Resource Center, because really we believe that this is the front lines of the pro-life movement. We believe that doing this work, loving our neighbor, opening our doors to the moms in this city that are facing difficult circumstances, whether it be an unplanned pregnancy or a planned pregnancy or whatever that looks like. What they're going to get at Hope is they're going to get someone, they're going to get a staff member, a volunteer that loves them well, that recognizes that their identity is not wrapped up in their addiction, that their identity is not wrapped up even in that pregnancy, that their identity is not wrapped up in an abusive relationship, their identity is not wrapped up in a broken home or anything like that, or their finances. Their identity is wrapped up in who created them. That's the message we have for folks. And so help us continue to get that message to those that need it, those that are walking through the doors of Hope Resource Center. Help us continue to love this city well. Be a part of it, investinghope.com. Again, the fundraising banquet Thursday, April 30th at 7 p.m. Today is the first day that you can register. I would encourage you to do that. You can find it on Facebook, Instagram, or go to investinghope.com and click on the events tab. We hope to see you there. I'll talk to you next week.